took sadistic pleasure in raping children wherever he went in the world.
He said that he had one more test to give me, that God wanted him to give him, administer one more test for me. It's there that he sodomized me.
Few survivors of his abuses mourned his death in August 1997. He was finally gone from their lives. At least he was until March this year.
In 1975, Bishop Francis McKiernan.
I know two people who have died by suicide as a result of being abused by Brandon Smith after 1975.
I did act.
But Sean Brady chose not to report Brendan Smith's crimes to the police in 1975.
Hundreds, perhaps 1,000 children were abused by Smith because Brady did not do the right thing.
In 1994 and 1995, we exposed Brendan Smith, a vicious, violent sexual predator who destroyed children and their families. He got away with it for almost 50 years. But only now do we fully understand not only his depravity, but the squalid and debased cover-up by educated men of the church, men with doctorates in canon law. Bishops, archbishops and cardinals knowingly and deliberately hid the sins of the vile abuse by rapist priests to protect the good name of the church. So tonight, our story begins when Brendan Smith was sent to the United States for the first time in 1965. By this time, his religious order and the Catholic Church had been aware of his pedophilia for nearly 20 years. Helen McGonigal was just 6 when she was first abused by Father Brendan Smith.
So there's nobody in the classroom but me and Smith. In that classroom, that's when he pulled up my skirt. He had his hand, he put his hand in my underwear, and he told me his finger was the finger of God, and he penetrated me with his finger.
Father Brendan Smith was sent to Providence, Rhode Island in the United States in 1965. The church didn't bother to tell parishioners about Father Brendan Smith's past as a child rapist. However, it didn't take their children long to find out.
I was taken into an area that seemed like it was in the basement of the church, and into a room that had maybe boxes or file cabinet. And in that room, I was abused by him there. There was a chair there. I was alone in that room with him. And he had his fingers in my underwear again, but he also had me perform fellatio.
Sent home from Providence in early 1968 after complaints about child abuse, Smith received psychiatric treatment in Belfast. Brendan Smith epitomized the system of cover-up. His religious order knew he was a child rapist from the late 40s, but for almost 50 years continued to move him around the globe. Often his order did this in collusion with the wider Catholic Church. But cover-ups are not cheap. So far, the Catholic Church has paid $3 billion in the United States alone to settle claims against pedophile priests.
So you can imagine if we knew the whole picture in the United States, if victims in all 50 United States were able to bring civil action, the amount of the payout by the Catholic Church would be absolutely mind-boggling. And $3 billion already is a mind-boggling figure.
Some dioceses went bankrupt. Others were flush and paid cash. Boston sold the Archbishop's residence and 43 acres of land for $100 million. To settle 500 pedophile cases. But then they also got rid of the Archbishop, Cardinal Bernard Law. The people of Boston were angry. Cardinal Law shielded 220 pedophile priests for 18 years, during which time they raped and abused 1,000 children.
I was just enraged, and I had this sense that I wanted to confront Cardinal Law. And it was so naive because this man already knew of at least 200 Boston priests who had abused children. Nothing I could say was going to shame him.
I think also the severity of the abuse is something that I couldn't have even imagined until I began working on this. This isn't a matter of children being hugged inappropriately or touched inappropriately. These are situations in which a boy will be anally raped and go back through the streets from the rectory to his own home with blood in his trousers.
The second crisis is the widespread and massive cover-up of child sex crimes by Catholic bishops. They knowingly concealed child predators. They knowingly gave sanctuary to child rapists in the Catholic Church and put more children in harm's way, knowing that this priest would go on to rape and abuse again.
Protection of this kind allowed Brendan Smith to return to Rhode Island in 1969 to resume his assaults on Helen at school and in the church as well. Worst still, he becomes a tenant in Helen's street. Now Smith is perfectly placed to note when Helen's father is away on business.
He got into my bedroom because my sister had gone out and left the door unlocked. He came in and he was on top of me in my own bed and he sodomized me. All I just remember is having him on top of me, a painful experience. I saw him another time in the bedroom over my sister, doing the same thing to my sister.
As she prepared to sue the church, Helen decided to contact a childhood friend, Jeff Thomas. Helen's call triggers in Jeff total recall of the bad memories of Smith that he'd been suppressing for three decades.
I was having difficulty with dreams coming back to me and not knowing the meaning of the dreams. I was having difficulty with my marriage, issues in my marriage. And what ended up happening was I got a phone call one day from my brother. And he had heard from an old neighbor of mine that there was problems with somebody that used to live in our neighborhood.
That was Helen McGonigal.
That was Helen McGonigal, correct.
Jeff and Helen were next door neighbors in the late 60s through to the 70s. During their childhood friendship, neither knew that the other was also being abused by Smith.
We came back to the neighborhood here. We walked through Jeff's property. Jeff looked at my house, and I could hear him say under his breath, "She had to have seen." Months passed before he ever told me why he was saying it, and it was because, yes, my mother saw Jeff in his backyard by the stone wall.
Jeff told Helen a long-held secret about her mom the day that Father Brendan Smith violated him.
He was out in the backyard of my neighbor Helen's house one day, and he said that he had one more test to give me, that God wanted him to administer one more test for me. He led me down my backyard behind a stone wall behind Helen's house, and it's there that he sodomized me.
And my mom was looking out a window of our house and saw Smith.
Helen McGonigal's mom came running out in like a bathrobe and slippers, yelling at Father Smith, "What are you doing with that boy? What are you doing with that boy?" Father Smith told me to run along and go back to my house.
Shouted at him, "What are you doing to that little boy?"
And she said the same thing, to go back to my house, which I did. And as I'm leaving the two of them, I can hear her screaming at him.
And Smith charged up to her and said, "Get out of here. This is church business. Get back into your house."
And in a perverse way, Father Smith could consider it church business, given that the church was permitting him to go on raping children rather than report him to the police. Helen's mum was a devout Catholic, and the confrontation with Smith was a heavy burden.
She just went off the deep end very quickly, in a very, very quick span of time. And Jeff Thomas's mom told me that even at one point, my mom was so distraught about something, and she's out in the middle of the road here screaming, "The Pope owes me." She was so angry, you know. "The Pope owes me. The Pope owes me." You know, my mom was the kind of person that was given, she was offered a full scholarship to Notre Dame to go to college, and she turned it down because she would never want to take anything from the Catholic Church. So for her to feel so angry, yeah, to say, "The Pope owes me," well, the Pope owes us, all of us. And that's the way she felt. That's the way she felt.
Back in Ireland in 1975, Smith found himself under investigation by Sean Brady, but not reported to the police. In part two, we asked the question, why did Sean Brady fail to act in 1975 by not reporting Smith to the police?
I did act.
Still to come in part two, Sean Brady's failure to report sex abuser Brendan Smith to the police. But first to Helen and Jeff in the United States, as they continue to battle the psychological damage of abuse that they suffered in the 60s. Forensic psychiatrist Dr. Ian Bones has first-hand knowledge of the damage Smith and paedophiles like him can cause.
Every facet of the individual's life, the way that they react and the way that they focus and cope with relationships or relationships that are not going terribly well, every domain, every facet of the individual's life will be affected in some way. If the trauma was specifically related to a sexual event, that can evoke a very catastrophic reaction in the individual.
I've lost everything that I own. Everything that I held dear is gone. My wife left me with my kids, and in about a three-day time span, she called me on a Wednesday, said she couldn't handle it anymore, she was going to leave. She was out of the house on Saturday, took my kids away from me that way. That was an event that I never want to visit again. It was very, very difficult.
Helen says Brendan Smith destroyed her mother's mental health and drove her to an early grave. She blames Smith for the suicides of her brother Jerry and her abused sister Kathy.
What Smith did to our family, fractured our family, destroyed it. I mean, destroyed our mother, destroyed my brother. So,
these family tragedies fuel Helen's desire for justice. The church has offered a payoff, but she's refused. Though she is suing the church, she accepts payments from them for her counseling.
We at Manly Stewart have covered over 700 cases.
Pat Wall is a key member of Helen's legal team. Previously, as a young priest and a canon lawyer, he was instructed by his bishop to handle the clean-up and closing down of cases involving paedophile priests. In other words, he implemented the cover-up.
Well, as a priest, all five of my assignments had to deal with childhood sexual abuse. That was the ultimate reason why I got moved or why I got assigned to places. And it was all ultimately about the scandal. And what I came to find out, instead of working for a holy institution, I worked for an institution that was wholly concerned about itself and covering it up, almost as if I was working for the mob. And that's when I had to get out.
Tom Doyle was an ambitious priest and canon lawyer at the Vatican Embassy in Washington, until he could no longer tolerate the way bishops used civil courts to grind down their opponents to maintain the cover-up.
So on the one hand, the bishop says, we're so sorry for the harm that's been done. And on the other hand, they keep paying their lawyers millions of dollars to obstruct justice, to embarrass victims, to intimidate them. That goes on all the time. So that's rank hypocrisy as far as I'm concerned.
People who thought they were part of a good religious organization and found that, in fact, they were members of an organization involved in systemic crime. What happens to these people? There is no hand stretched out to help them. There are so many victims in all of this.
Back in Ireland, another of those victims, a woman now living in Canada, was sexually assaulted by Brendan Smith. In 1997, she lodged papers suing the Catholic Church and Cardinal Sean Brady, The case has only just been settled this year.